The following sermon was delivered by Senior Pastor Reverend Dr. Scott Black Johnston in the sanctuary of Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. We welcome you to worship with us every Sunday in person or on live stream. For details, go to fapc.org. And now, here's Reverend Dr. Scott Black Johnston.
This autumn, Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church has been talking about the connection between faith and civic leadership. To inform our thinking, we have been reading the book of 1 Samuel together. For the past 11 weeks, we've been watching as these remarkably relevant stories cast light on our world. Today marks the final sermon in the fall series. Next week, as you just heard, is Pledge Sunday, and the Sunday after that, we begin the journey of Advent. I pray that you will join us and invite friends to accompany you as we make our way, candle by candle, toward a blessed Christmas. See you there. And now to the task at hand. In dramatic fashion, today's reading from 1 Samuel brings the saga of the prophet Samuel and King Saul to a close. At this point in the narrative, Samuel, the namesake for our fall sermon series, is dead. Surprisingly, though, eerily, this does not mean that Samuel is done pronouncing God's truth. Listen now for one of the good book's spookiest stories as it echoes to us from 1 Samuel chapter 28, beginning with the fifth verse. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid and his heart trembled greatly. When Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, not by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. Then Saul said to his servants, "Seek out for me a woman who is a medium, so that I may go to her and inquire of her." His servants said to him, "There's a medium at Endor." So Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes and went there, and two men went with him. They came to the woman by night, and he said, "Consult a spirit for me and bring up for me the one whom I name to you." The woman said to him, "Surely you know what Saul has done, how he's cut off the mediums and the wizards from the land. Why then are you laying a snare for my life to bring about my death?" But Saul swore to her, "By the Lord, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing." Then the woman said, "Whom shall I bring up for you?" He answered, "Bring up Samuel for me." When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman said to Saul, "Why have you deceived me? You are Saul." The king said to her, "Have no fear. What do you see?" The woman said to Saul, "I see a divine being coming up out of the ground." He said to her, "What is his appearance?" She said, "An old man is coming up. He's wrapped in a robe." So Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed with his face to the ground and did obeisance. Then Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" Saul answered, "I'm in great distress, for the Philistines are warring against me, and God has turned away from me and answers me no more, either by prophets or by dreams. So I've summoned you to tell me what I should do." Samuel said, Why then do you ask me? Since the Lord has turned from you and become your enemy, the Lord has done to you just as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom from your hand and given it to your neighbor David, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord and did not carry out his fierce wrath against Amalek. Therefore, the Lord has done this thing to you today. Moreover, the Lord will give Israel along with you into the hands of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons shall be with me. The Lord will also give the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines. Immediately, Saul fell full length on the ground, filled with fear because of the words of Samuel, and there was no strength in him, for he had eaten nothing all day and all night. The woman came to Saul, and when she saw that he was terrified, she said to him, "Your servant has listened to you. I've taken my life in my hand and have listened to what you have said to me. Now, therefore, you also listen to your servant. Let me set a morsel of bread before you. Eat, that you may have strength when you go on your way." This is the word of God for you, the people of God. Thanks be to God. So, King Saul is troubled. Once again, he's about to go into battle. And yet, as he surveys the field, an ominous shadow grows in his heart. The enemy is big. His own troops are nervous. Saul trembles. The old warrior feels a disturbance in the force. Seeking guidance, the king turns to a flock of court prophets for advice. No luck there. Nothing they have to say is of any help. Ever since Samuel died, local clergy have served him nothing but milquetoast, flattering words that dance far from the shores of truth. Anxious for honest counsel, done with yes men, Saul keeps looking. Eventually, he decides to pursue mystic counsel. The king is determined to wring a word, a message from the world beyond. The ancient Israelites had a number of funky, quasi-mystical ways to seek the will of God. One of their favorites involved tossing bones, the Urim and the Thummim, bones inscribed with symbols. According to 1 Samuel, Saul rolls these creepy dice, and still nothing, no word from God. Today's text puts it this way: when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, not by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. The good book raises an ironic eyebrow here. One of Saul's first acts as king was to declare fortune-telling to be illegal. He promised death to all diviners. He shut down all the palm readers and psychic hotlines in ancient Israel. And there's the rub. The king banned all the soothsayers, only now he's desperate for some sooth, for some unadorned truth. Yearning to close the distance between himself and God, Saul summons his cabinet. He issues a surprising directive: find me a woman who's a medium. And even though there's a nationwide ban on mediums, they respond in a flash. There's a witch in Endor. Suspish? Just a little. I guess there have always been people who know how to get banned substances and services in a society. It doesn't seem to matter to Saul. Keen on finally hearing the truth, the king slips into a disguise and gallops off to meet with the witch. When Saul arrives at her home late at night, the mystical woman's antenna go up. She suspects entrapment. So the king promises that he's no spiritual vice cop, and then Saul asks the witch to contact Samuel. It's a gutsy choice. Samuel and Saul did not part on the best of terms. The prophet was the king's most vocal critic. So why call for Samuel? Here, I wonder if Saul is showing forth a sort of rare quality, a flash of good leadership. In politics, in business, even in the church, good leadership depends on the facts. Maybe Saul knows, in the words of business guru Jim Collins, that not facing the facts, especially hard facts, uncomfortable truths, inevitably sends an organization, an individual, a whole country down a destructive path. During World War II, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Winston Churchill, became worried that his closest advisors were sugarcoating bad news. The English bulldog didn't think that his advisors were trying to be dishonest. Instead, Churchill believed that his inner circle was spreading frosting on the truth because they personally were so eager to see the war go in a positive direction. And yet Churchill had no patience for this sort of wishful thinking. In leading a nation that was fighting for its survival, he wanted unvarnished truth. Anything less, the prime minister feared, would result in bad decisions. So early in the war, Churchill created a new department in the British government called the Statistical Office. And this new team was charged with feeding the prime minister unfiltered statistics about the war. Production numbers for military hardware. News about supply shortages in villages across the island nation. Casualty figures from battles. Churchill relied on this special unit. He encouraged them, repeatedly saying, "Facts are better than fairy tales. Facts are better than fairy tales." Perhaps this explains why Saul asks the witch to get Samuel on the phone. He wants the truth. He's sick of reality denying flattery. And maybe Saul is looking for something else too. When he was alive, Samuel was the king's reliable connection to the Lord. Samuel could always be counted on to serve up a word from God. And here, I think the good book is flexing its spiritual and psychological depth. Saul is more than a cardboard cutout. He's not simply a bad king, a straw man engaged in unmitigated wickedness. Despite the king's many flaws, he's still grasping for faith. Saul will do anything to get God's ear. A few weeks ago, thanks to a generous gift from one of you, A few members of the church staff went to see Kenneth Branagh in King Lear at the Shed. The arc that King Lear follows is a painful one. As the play starts, the king solicits flattery from members of his court, and especially from his three daughters. Painfully, Lear asks his children to wax eloquent on how much they love him. As two of his daughters pour buckets of sweet talk on their powerful daddy's head, the king basks in the moment. He mistakes their sycophancy for genuine affection. And taken in by this flattery, King Lear then makes a series of decisions that by the end of the play tear his kingdom to bits. What is Shakespeare saying about leadership? Well, perhaps the bard is making a political point. Kingdoms fall not so much because of foreign conquest, they fall when human brokenness holds the reins of power. They fall when our worst instincts push their way to the center of our heads, to the center of our society, and demand to make decisions. I think you can make a good argument for this being a central theme in every one of Shakespeare's tragic plays. And at the same time, I think there's more to be gleaned from King Lear and King Saul than grim political lessons. By the end of the play, Lear, nearly driven mad by the chaos that he has unleashed, contemplates his own complicity in the storm that ravages his kingdom. The king repents. In today's text, the witch summons the ghost of Samuel for Saul. Samuel's spirit predicts that Saul will be defeated in battle with the Philistines, and in the process, the king and his two sons will lose their lives. It's terrible news. The storm to come shakes Saul. Is this what the king was expecting to hear from his old critic, from the prophet, from God? I don't know. But I do think that we know enough about the dynamics between these two men to say this. Saul knew that good or bad, he had a relationship with the Lord through Samuel. And in the end, King Saul valued this relationship above all else. That's why I choose to hear Samuel's final words to Saul as words of comfort. Tomorrow, you and your sons shall be with me. And with that, the ghost departs. As the saga of Saul and our fall sermon series come to an end, 1 Samuel then leaves us with one last and truly remarkable image. Having heard terrible but true news, Saul falls to the ground, and seeing this trembling man lying in the dust, the witch goes to him. She helps him up. She cares for him. She begins to prepare something for him to eat. Archbishop Desmond Tutu, tireless advocate of dignity and hope, God rest his saintly soul, once said, "If we are able to see ourselves in other people, our experience in the world will inevitably be a richer, kinder, more connected one. If we look at others and see ourselves reflected back, we inevitably treat people better. My friends, this is so clearly a major theme in 1 Samuel. Whenever things seem about to fall apart during this slice of human history, someone, oftentimes a surprising person like pregnant Hannah or wise Abigail or this compassionate witch, stands in the breach and advocates for basic kindness. Again and again, 1 Samuel testifies to the courage and heart of ordinary people who confront and bring solace against the backdrop of bloody battles, political chaos, and the rise and fall of empires. Last week, I was on the 6th train, jouncing along in a car, watching a man seated across from me who I judged to be homeless. He was snoozing. As we screeched to a halt at 86th Street, a paperback book in his lap, an English to Spanish, Spanish to English phrase book, jiggled and slid to the floor. And at that moment, without missing a beat, a young woman sitting next to me hopped up, grabbed the book, dusted it off, and tucked it back in next to him. It happened so fast, this guerrilla act of human kindness. Every Sunday, I watch the deacons of this church stand right down here in front after the service to offer prayers for people. I often see them resting a hand on the shoulder of the person who's asked for prayer. I watch as those who have been prayed for express gratitude for this sacred contact, hearts turned toward heaven together, making an appeal. In the hustle and bustle of people moving around the sanctuary after worship, it's easy to miss these moments, these guerrilla acts of human kindness. I wonder, after 11 weeks spent in this quarter of the Good Book, as we bounce along on history's 6th train, if the counsel of 1 Samuel for us goes like this: be kind, trust that there is sufficient power in human kindness, kindness inspired by faith in a compassionate God to carry us all through this day. Brave friends, go out into the world and be kind. Be kind like the Witch of Endor was kind. Hold fast to what is good. Do not return evil for evil. Strengthen the faint-hearted. Encourage the weak. Help the suffering. Honor all people. Love and serve the Lord. Amen.
We hope this sermon has been meaningful to you and given you a measure of hope, encouragement, and good news. If you would like to make a donation to support this audio ministry, please visit fapc.org/give. Thank you and blessings to you on this day.